This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, Tony D on vacation. John Stashower in, Ron Culver in. And when you get a one-point game in an NBA conference final game, and it's won on an inbounds alley-oop pass with less than a second to go, there's lots to rehash. We will do that coming up shortly. And talk about the Phoenix Suns, who certainly appear to be on their way to the NBA Finals, and we'll discuss how they have gotten here and just how unlikely a journey it has been for the Suns and whether the Clippers have anything left in them. So some NBA talk. Chris Sheridan, who's been covering the league for many years, will join us next hour. Obviously, we'll talk a little about Ben Simmons, still in the news, people conjecturing on where he might play next year if Philadelphia can swing a trade. Also want to talk about a story that broke yesterday out of Madison, Wisconsin. I thought this was stunning. A secret recording of a conversation. So this is very much a 21st century kind of story, as people just, you know, hit record on their cell phones and secretly record, and people don't realize that the conversation is being recorded. It was a conversation with the Wisconsin basketball coaching staff, the coach Greg Gard and the assistants, and the seven seniors on the team. And really all we learned about it was the comments made by the seniors, who just ripped the coaching staff, tore into them. And it says a lot about the relationship or lack thereof between the players and coaches, and people wondering if it's going to cost Greg Gard his job if his players hate him that much. But also just stunning at how brazen and honest, I guess, these players were to talk about their coaches like that right in front of them. Times have changed. So I want to get into that a little bit as well. We'll do some baseball. We'll do some hockey. We'll talk a little about the Olympics a little bit. Carl Nassib, a little reaction to that. So lots to do on this Wednesday morning, but we'll kick things off with the thrilling win by the Suns last night. We'll do that coming up. Stay with us. Sports Map Radio.
This is the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
And for Tony D and Ron Culver alongside here on Sports Map Radio on a Wednesday morning. Ron is a Laker fan, so he watched that game last night with his anti-Clipper, bias or feelings. And, I don't know about you, Ron. I have no, gun in the fight. I don't really. I mean, I kind of like the Suns' story of where they've been and where they appear to be headed, but I'm just enjoying these games. And these games have been, look at some of these games we've had. The last, there were no games on Monday, but over the weekend we had overtime of a game seven, Kevin Durant hitting a shot that you first thought was going to be a series winning shot. He had a foot on the line. They went to overtime. The game seven between Atlanta and Philadelphia was really tight. I mean, the Suns-Clippers game one was good, and then the game last night was just a classic. And you think back to the bubble, and nothing against the, there were some good games in the bubble. Remember Anthony Davis hit that shot to win a game. I mean, but there was just no atmosphere. It was just it's so much better now. And how about that game last night?
Nah, what was best about that game was that fans in the stands.
Yeah, full house.
That when you get the crowd noise into it, that's what was missing last year. Last year, you had the manufactured
you
crowd
had sneakers noise, squeaking.
Yeah. You had video game graphic sounds just pumping.
Yeah. Ugh, awful. And it's not their fault. I'm not blaming anyone.
But you see the quality of basketball too. We heard the crowd noise. The players didn't hear the crowd noise. It wasn't like they were pumping it into the arena in the bubble. Those guys were just playing, you know, it was mainly like a five-on-five pickup game that you would find at any local park.
Right.
But for us, like, you know, you can feel the energy. I mean, God, Aiden dropped that thing down. Controversy ensued.
Yeah.
So melee on the court.
Yeah, it had a little of everything. So let's rehash it a little bit. This was a very tight game, but Phoenix had the upper hand a little bit for most of it. They were up 7 in the fourth quarter, up 6 with 3 minutes to go. They're up 5 with 90 seconds to go. Give the Clippers credit. Luke Kennard hits a shot. Paul George, he did make a couple of free throws, and then he hit a shot to put him up one. And then Devin Booker, who was much quieter than in game one, he had half the points. He had 20. He had cotton up his nose, but he did hit a shot, put him back ahead. And then George hit another shot. You know, give him credit. He was the reason why the Clippers were right there. But then the two missed free throws with 8 seconds to go. He was 5 for 10 from the free throw line. And then Mikal Bridges misses a three-pointer. And, Ron, I thought a big aspect of the end of this game that gets overlooked a little bit because of what happened afterwards were the Clippers being unable to get the rebound on that Bridges miss. And if you look who's on the floor there, they didn't have any big men out there. They actually had Terrence Mann, who's basically a guard, trying to box out DeAndre Ayton. And couldn't secure the rebound. And so another chance for the Suns. Inbounding with less than a second to go. Let's take a listen to the call as heard on ESPN.
Crowder looking, throws it alley. Oh! Ayton puts it down! He puts it down! It's over! And they're trying to say goaltending, but that's a live basketball. He can finish it.
Right, there is no goaltending on an inbound pass.
That's a good call by Jeff Van Gundy and, you know, Mark Jackson and Mike Breen. I thought Van Gundy also made a really good point in that after the Bridges miss and they're looking to see who has the ball and maybe how much time exactly left on the clock, that gave the Suns another timeout that they didn't have. So they were able to dial up that play, the inbounds pass by Crowder to Ayton, that, you know, if without replay review, when they're just handing them the ball, there's no way that they would be that organized to know exactly what to do in that situation. So here are the Suns, you know, two wins without Chris Paul, and now presumably he's on his way back. And I think the Suns are on their way to the NBA Finals.
And on the flip side, you have the Clippers down 2 again in a series. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens with them, right?
Which they did come back from against Utah, but I don't know if you can do it again. Again, Chris Paul.
Well, this will be their third time in a row doing it.
Yeah, you're right. And you give them credit for that, but I think it ends here. And you look at this Suns team and, you know, Devin Booker is terrific. He wasn't that great last night. They still win. Now, DeAndre Ayton was really good, and he was a first overall pick. You do get some credit. You know, you do get some help when you're really bad, and they were really bad, and they did win the lottery 1 year and get the first overall pick. Now, Ayton hasn't turned into a, you know, necessarily a generational player or anything, but that he's a very good big man, and he had a really good game last night. But, you know, the biggest, their best player on the floor last night was Cameron Payne. I mean, this is a guy out of Murray State. He actually was a first-round pick, 14th overall to Oklahoma City, but he had injuries, and this is a journeyman. I mean, he's bounced around. He's getting 10-day contracts. He's playing for, you know, the different teams. He was in the G League last year, and he comes out and scores 29 points and gets 9 assists. In a conference finals game, and is the high scorer, scores more points than anyone else on the floor. I mean, you got to give the Suns credit. You have to be, you know, you got to be a little bit lucky, maybe win a lottery and get a guy like Ayton. You know, adding Chris Paul certainly helps out. Booker was not, you know, he was, I think, a 10th overall pick, but, you know, you have to be smart with pickups of guys like Cameron Payne. You know, anybody could have had Cameron Payne, and they got him. Give him credit.
And that's what's been exciting about the Suns team is that it feels to me like they're the more complete team out of all the four teams that are left. Because any given night, you know, we saw game one, Booker was the man. And then yesterday, I mean, it wasn't really that Payne was the man, but there was a lot of people who were all contributing at the same time. And so the Clippers, their game plan, I mean, probably was to neutralize Booker make the other guy shoot, and the other guy shot and scored. I mean, it was simple.
You know, think about where the Suns have been. Hadn't been in the playoffs since 2010. It's not that hard to make the NBA playoffs, right? I mean, it's over half the teams get in. Usually a team gets in, you know, even like Sacramento. Well, maybe not Sacramento, but almost every team gets in. To go that long, to go 11 years without making the playoffs, you're really bad. And you look at, you know, I mean, they had a bunch of different coaches. Earl Watson was the coach there. Igor Kakasov, I believe that's pronounced, but he was the coach right before Monty Williams. You know, I'll ask you, give a guess on what the over-under for wins was for the Suns at the start of the year. Now, remember, they finished the season strong in the bubble. They went 8-0. They opened some eyes there, didn't quite get in. But 72-game season, what do you guess the over-under was?
I'll go about 38. Right.
Still, that's just over 500. That was what was expected of them to be, I think, 12th highest. So I think there was a feeling that maybe they could sneak into the playoffs as a, you know, a 7 or 8 seed, that kind of thing, especially with Chris Paul going there. But nobody could have foreseen this, you know, to be second overall and 51 wins. And, I mean, they've won 8 straight in the playoffs. They won 19 games 2 years ago, the whole season, the last full season in the NBA. They went 19-63, and they're up 2-0 in the final. They win 2 games without Chris Paul. Now, we talked about it yesterday. We talked about it Monday. It's kind of a wash. The Suns without Chris Paul, the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard. I don't see how you could give one team. I mean, Leonard is a you know, the bigger scorer, but the Suns have relied so much on Paul, and there were certainly times last night where you thought, man, if they had Chris Paul, like, they'd have a turnover, and they'd be like, well, that wouldn't have happened if Chris Paul was on the floor. But the bottom line is they're up 2-0, and Chris Paul's coming back, don't you think? I mean, when did we learn about the COVID protocol? That was about over a week ago, I think.
Yeah, was that last Friday?
Was it that? Yeah. So it's,
or last Thursday? It was one of those 2 days.
Yeah, all right, so it's been a little less than a week.
So I mean, less than a week.
John Rahm came back, you know, a week and a half after learning he had a positive test, and, you know, he's playing in the U.S. Open.
So I don't know, maybe he misses one more.
They had said he's coming back early in the series. Well, he's already missed two. The only way he could still be on the first half of a series is to play game 3. But I don't know. Obviously, they'll get him back as soon as, but he's coming back at some point, and Kawhi Leonard, I don't think, is coming back.
Yeah, that's the difference, right? I mean, right. Kawhi Leonard has a legit injury. Chris Paul's just waiting for that negative test.
Right.
There were 2 negative tests or 3.
He was vaccinated. It still happens. We've seen it now. Although John Rahm only had 1 shot. I think Paul had 2, but what, you know, it's, I don't know, maybe he had J&J, which is not as, you know,
it's effective.
Yeah. It's not as 195%. It's 70 or whatever it is, but I think he's coming back, and I think the Suns are going to win the series. I think they're going to play in the NBA Finals.
I think so.
And it's only happened twice before. It happened, and we'll talk a little about this, because 1976, they lost to the Celtics. There was that epic Game 5 that went triple overtime. And the other time, the last time, was 1993, when they had a really good team with Charles Barkley and Kevin Johnson. They had Dan Majerle, remember that? And couldn't beat Michael Jordan, because nobody could ever beat Michael Jordan. But that was a really good series that the Bulls won in 6 games. So I think it's going to be the Suns. And Hawks and Bucks, of course, they've got their game 1 in the East tonight. Much more NBA talk ahead, but I want to get to this story out of Wisconsin yesterday. Players versus coaches. Stay with us. I'm John Stashower, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to the Sports Map Radio Network,
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
Good day, you're with us. Sports Map Radio on a Wednesday morning. I'm John Stashower. So the Wisconsin basketball team this past season went 18-13, 10-10 in the Big Ten, which was the best conference in the country. They did make it to the NCAA tournament. They actually beat North Carolina in the first round, and then they lost to Baylor. No shame there. Baylor went on to win the whole thing. And they're in the news because on February 18th, after the Badgers lost by 15 to Iowa, who was a good team, there was a team meeting with the coach, Greg Gard, and his assistants, and the seven seniors on the team. And somebody hit record on their cell phone, which is not unusual these days. Greg Gard didn't know that the tape was rolling, as we say in the business, and a writer in Madison got leaked that the recording. And it's stunning. I haven't actually heard the audio, just the transcripts, but it's basically the players wailing on the coach and in no uncertain terms telling the coach how much they hate the coach. I mean, Micah Potter, who was the second leading scorer, talked about how his senior year, he came back for another year and he said he felt like it was a wasted year. Dimitric Trice, who was the leading scorer, said, told Greg Gard, we're not playing for you. Akeem Ford said, let's wait on that. Nate Ruver said to Greg Gard, we don't have a relationship. It's too late for that. You don't care about us. I can't even talk to you, and I don't even want to talk to you. This is the player talking to his head coach. And Akeem Ford said to Greg Gard, looked him straight in the eye and said, I wouldn't want my son to come here and have to go. I wouldn't want anyone to go through what I had to go through. So, Greg Gard's, got some explaining to do about why his players hate him so much. But Ron, let me ask you, are you shocked to hear that, I mean, you hate to be the old, back in my day kind of thing, but it's one thing for coaches to talk to players like that, but I'm a little stunned to hear that players were talking to coaches like that. What about you?
Yeah, I know. It is a back in my day. Coaches had all the power, and now it seems like, I don't know, it's just this rise of, kind of see it in the NBA too, where the NBA, the players kind of dictate what happens around them. And if they don't like a team, it's like, oh, I want to go to this team. And it usually makes it happen. And we're starting to see it in the NFL now. I think it's becoming a dangerous, slippery slope.
But you're talking about professionals who are older and grown men and making millions of dollars. These are college kids. That's what stuns me. Imagine a player telling Bob Knight. I mean, like, again, or pick a guy. I mean, it doesn't even have to be some hardliner like Bobby Knight. Any coach. You're so used to seeing, coaches get in the ear of a player and a player just kind of sitting there and taking it. And we've all played sports and that happens. And coaches doesn't mean they hate you. They're trying to make you tougher and get their point across. And sometimes there's coaches who take it too far. No question. I think Bobby Knight certainly was guilty of that. I don't know whether Greg Gard, what his reputation is. This is a guy who was an assistant to Bo Ryan. Remember, Bo Ryan quit a few years ago, and this guy took over. I don't know, what he's about and what goes on behind the scenes. It's a bad situation. And if you're the athletic director at Wisconsin, and they just got a new one, I mean, you got to bring Greg Gard in the office and talk to him and say, what's going on here? I mean, that's not a – first of all, how does Greg Gard now go out and recruit when everyone's going to be aware of these conversations and Greg Gard's going to try and convince kids, oh, come play for me. And, we have a family environment and everybody, recruits going to say, whoa, what's going on here? If I were Wisconsin, I'd have to think look, they were 18 and 13. Wisconsin had some good teams under Bo Ryan. Remember, they had that team that, went to the Final Four. They're slipping a little bit. So if their one loss record was better, he'd probably be on better footing. The fact that they lost 13 games and we hear that the players hate him, I would think he's in some real trouble. What would you do if you're the Wisconsin athletic director?
I mean, yeah, what do we say all the time? Like, once a coach loses the locker room, that's pretty much it for him, right? And this, it sounds like he's... I don't know if he's just lost the locker room. He's lost everything. I don't know what to. I don't know what the next step would be. The next step, I mean, you can't really. It's not one of those situations where you can all sit everyone down and have a powwow.
By the way, I'm flicking around last night, and Hoosiers was on. So I'm watching the scene in Hoosiers where he start his first like practice with the team. They don't even use the basketball.
Yep.
And they're just running sprints, and the fathers are there. What the hell is this guy doing? And one guy quits the team, but then he comes back because his father makes him come back and apologize. But that was the 1950s. It was in Indiana. Was it the 50s or 40s? I don't know. In Indiana. And it's 2021.
I mean, think about it. Can a coach at a prominent program, could a coach bench a player for not making that pass? I don't remember the character's name, but I remember in Hoosiers, remember he benched one of his star players, put the short kid in there.
Right. Well, he also went with four players.
No, that's right. Yeah.
My team had a guy on the bench. He wouldn't put him in. My team's on the floor. Played with four guys, yeah. It's a great movie. I mean, it's one of those movies you're flicking around and it's on and seen it a million times, so you still got to watch it. But
top five.
Yeah, it's a
sports
good,
movie.
Sports wise, I think so too. So look, times have changed. The other thing that makes this such a 21st century story is they're having this team meeting and somebody hits record on their cell phone. You didn't have to worry about that back in the day. I guess that's another lesson to be learned. Although
Antonio Brown right there.
We didn't really hear anything about what the coaches were saying. These were all these quotes from the players. I don't know if there was a back and forth. I mean, it's almost like you're only hearing like the players just like, lecturing the coaches. Like, did the coaches have anything to say in response to any of this? I don't know. And maybe there's another side to the story. Again, I don't know. But I was stunned.
But even if there's another side to the story, you never had that, and that seems to be like kind of the, I don't know, I guess what it's progressing to is you never had a player uprising. I mean, if a player was uprising, it was because the coach did something drastically terrible. But if the coach just isn't coaching the way you like it, you never had players.
Maybe you had one.
Around. Yeah,
maybe you had one guy who was kind of a hothead or didn't appreciate things and fought back a little bit. But this was like a coordinated response by the entire team, the seniors on the team. They get in this meeting, and this isn't at the end of the year. This is still, they've got several weeks to go in the season. By the way, after that meeting on February, they lost by 15 to Iowa. They went 2-4. So they won a couple games. Again, they weren't a horrible team. They went to the NCAA tournament and beat North Carolina and then lost to the team that won the whole tournament in Baylor. They were 18-13, 10-10 in the best conference in America last season.
In a weird year as well.
In a weird year, exactly. But, again, I was stunned. There were no dissenting. And maybe there was, but they didn't say anything. I mean, it didn't seem like there were any of these players who said, well, hold on a sec. I don't feel that way about you, coach. No, there was none of that. Not that we know of anyway. It was all in. I mean, how about Nate Rivers? We don't have a relationship. Too late for that. You don't care about us. I can't talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. He's lecturing his head coach. I wouldn't want my son to come here. I wouldn't want anyone to go through what I went through. So it makes you wonder, do we know what exactly they went through? Are we going to hear more from these guys who made these comments? That's going to be an interesting angle to this story. When Akeem Ford says, I wouldn't want anyone to go through what I went through, what exactly happened here at Wisconsin? Something I would think had to have led. This is not a this is not a family atmosphere at Wisconsin.
Curious.
I would not, if I had a kid who was a recruit, you might not want to think about Wisconsin. You might want to go somewhere else.
Was he taking a ruler to his players? Yeah, was he smacking them around?
I don't know. Get back to the NBA. Ben Simmons, where might he be headed? We'll talk about it next. Stay with us.
This is the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
Sports Map Radio on a Wednesday morning. John Stashower in for Tony D. We played you the play-by-play call last night on the game-winning DeAndre Ayton dunk off the pass from Jay Crowder. And you got to give a lot of credit to Crowder. I mean, that was perfect. Perfect execution. And, you know, Ron, did the Clippers, I mean, if you look the replay, the Devin Booker sets a screen. Zubic has trouble to getting through. I don't know if you can necessarily fault the Clippers defense there. I mean, that's a tough play to defend. If that pass is thrown perfectly, and obviously Ayton knows it's coming, and the Clippers don't know it's coming, they don't know what the Suns are going to do in that situation. That's not an easy play to defend. So textbook execution by the Suns. Let's hear
I wonder if they've tried that before in practice.
Well, yeah. All right, here's Ayton on the game winner.
I just trust my teammates and my coaches. I just listen. I'm coachable. Just listen to what they told me to do. And, you know, Jay made a great pass. You know, I just finished. And I'm glad it counted. I didn't even know, you know, it counted for real. I wanted to hold in my celebration, but, you know, my teammates told me it counted, and we just wanted to finish the game off strong.
Yeah, it counted because, as they pointed out on ESPN, normally, you know, a ball in the cylinder like that, you can't touch, but on an alley-oop, on an inbounds, you can. And they had plenty of time because clock doesn't start until Ayton touches the ball. So they threw it in with 0.9, and there was still some time left for the Clippers. But again, had Paul George made his free throws, there's no alley. I mean, there could have been. If he had made one of them, that would have tied the game. If he had made them both, obviously they lose that game. Paul George was asked about it.
I mean, I'm not going to put too much on that. Obviously, it was a opportunity that was missed. Pat made an unbelievable play that put me in position to extend the lead. I'm always confident at the free throw line. I've always been very successful in clutch moments at the free throw line. Tonight, I was just unsuccessful.
Did you see Cameron Payne, Ron, trying to get in George's head? He's like, and I guess it's legal. I mean, he's standing off to the side, and he's like pretending to make free throws, and then he's kind of, with the second one, he's kind of moving around. He's doing what he can to distract George. I mean, you could say it's poor sportsmanship, or it's gamesmanship. I mean, that's part of sports, so I don't have a problem with what Payne did. But Paul George, it's going to be a long summer thinking about those missed free throws. And he had missed some others in that game also. He was 5-for-10, and they lose by 1 point. Again, they're not there without him. I mean, I think he's been playing well. He's obviously had to step up and be more of the man without Kawhi Leonard. He led them back in game one. I thought he hit big shots. He led them back last night. They're not, you know, they don't take the lead without some of the shots that he hit. But the bottom line is, he makes a couple of free throws, they win that game.
Yeah, and I think we're not really seeing anybody else step up for the Clippers as well. I think that's part of the problem. It seems to be like a two-headed lion that leads that team, and one of the heads is not going to be. I don't think he's coming back. Where for the Suns, it feels like every single night somebody new is stepping up, and they're doing it without their veteran, leadership.
Cameron Payne, of course, steps up last night, 29 points, 9 assists. You're right, Terrence Mann had the huge game against Utah with 39 points out of nowhere, but he has not been playing like that in this series. So 2-0 Phoenix heading to L.A. I would think, you know, I would like the Clippers' chances in a game three. You'd have to think the Suns are going to lose eventually. They've won 8 in a row.
Yeah,
I don't know if the series is over, but I think the Suns at some point, whether it be 5 games or 6, I think the Suns are going to head to the NBA Finals.
Now, with the series shifting back to L.A., you got to imagine the Clippers are going to at least grab one of the two that are there. I don't see this being a sweep.
No.
But at the same time, let's be honest with each other. Would you be surprised if it was a sweep?
I guess not because, well, first of all, if you win game three, it's usually you're going to win game four because the Clippers would know that they're not going to, you know, come back from that. So, yeah, it's certainly possible. You're talking about Chris Paul coming back and Kawhi Leonard not. So certainly advantage Phoenix there. I mentioned before, you know, the Suns have only been in the finals twice. The 93 team that lost to Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and the 76 team, I was young. I was alive in 1976, but I mean, I don't know about you, Ron, but I mean, have you at least heard about that game five in Boston between the Suns and the Celtics in 1976?
No.
All right, so a couple of weirdly, really weird things happened in this game in the second overtime. John Havlicek hits a shot that everybody thinks has won the game for the Celtics. And back in the 70s, again, here we are with back in my day, but we would see this in, like, you know, like when the Yankees won the World Series, and fans used to just come out onto the field and the court. We don't see that anymore. So the fans at Boston Garden, thinking that they had won the game in double overtime, all storm out onto the court. But the official back then, like, the clock was supposed to stop after a made basket, and it didn't. And the official looked at the clock and said there should be 1 second left. So the fans, I don't know if the players had left the court or not, but they had to clear everyone out. And they said, no, there's actually 1 second left. The other thing that happens is it's Phoenix ball, but they're supposed to inbound from underneath the basket, and there's only a second left. They call a timeout that they know that they didn't have left, resulting in a technical foul. They purposely do this. But back then, the rule was, okay, it's a technical, but now you can inbound the ball from the front court after the technical foul shot. So that allowed them to, even though they called the tech, there was a technical, they made the shot, so instead of the Suns being down one, they're down by two, but they get to inbound it in the front court. Obviously, the rule now is you call a timeout, you can automatically advance it. And they hit this shot with a second to go to send the game to third overtime. The Celtics end up winning the game in three overtimes. So that was an historic game, and only one other time have the Suns been in the finals. And, of course, Clippers have never been in the finals. And the two teams that are starting tonight in the East, Atlanta hasn't been in the finals since as Atlanta. They were the St. Louis Hawks, and they went way back when. They won the championship in 1958, and that's been it. And the Bucks haven't been to the finals since 1974 when they had Kareem. So we talked about it earlier in the week, how it's just new teams, fresh blood in the NBA. Daryl Morey, who used to be the GM in Houston, is now running the show in Philadelphia. So they did a little bit of end of the season discussion with the media yesterday. And Morey said that there are about 25 teams that would love to be in the Sixers situation. But he really danced around every question that he got regarding the future of Ben Simmons. I've been reading a lot of conjecture, projected possible teams that Ben Simmons could get traded to. And everything I've seen is a trade that I don't think the other team would be willing to make. I mean, people talking about Portland giving up, well, maybe not Damian Lillard, but maybe CJ McCollum. I mean, Chicago trading Zach LaVine, Sacramento, De'Aaron Fox, Denver trading Michael Porter Jr. I don't think these teams are giving up those guys to get a Ben Simmons, who we just saw be so messed up on the court that he's afraid to take a shot. I don't think the Sixers would be getting that much in return.
I don't think there's a trade out there right now, to be quite honest with you. I mean, maybe if Ben Simmons was to play in the Olympics with Australia and showed something. Which he's not doing.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. You know, maybe then you could figure something else, but he's an untradeable commodity at this point. I don't know who would take a flyer, who would take a risk of giving up good prospects in exchange for that gigantic salary that he has for a guy who, you know, quite frankly, we just watched, didn't really produce.
And was just not only didn't play well, but mentally just wasn't there. I mean, I know he's not a jump shooter, he's not a three-point shooter, but he can score. He knows how to score. He knows how to finish, drive the basket. I mean, he's can't make a free throw now. He never can make a three-pointer, and he's just scared out on the court right now. So, yeah, I mean, these trade rumors, I don't see. I mean, Zach LaVine's only got 1 year left on his contract, so maybe something could happen there. I would take a flyer on Ben Simmons, knowing that he still has talent, but only if I didn't have to give up that much in return. You know, that's what I'm thinking for the Knicks. You know, I mean, I wouldn't trade R.J. Barrett for him. I wouldn't trade Julius Randle for him. Now, but, you know, a guy like Obi Toppin or something like that, it was a first-round pick and probably the Knicks don't really need. I don't know if the Sixers would make that trade. I would if I were the Knicks. But I don't think it's going to be. Michael Porter Jr., with what he just did in Denver, like coming out there, why would they trade him for Ben Simmons? I don't see that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't see. There's not a team out there right now that has anything. I mean, the Sixers would probably take, you know, a sack of potatoes at this point.
if
somebody just wants to pick up that contract. But there's not a, I don't. If it is, I mean, that GM has, whatever GM was to pull a trigger and make, you know, make that deal. If Ben Simmons is the Ben Simmons that we just saw, then that GM is done after that year. And I don't know if anyone's willing to put that on that on the line.
And I don't know if I agree with Daryl Morey that there's 25 teams that would love to be in the Sixers situation. I mean, you have Joel Embiid is terrific, although he gets hurt a lot. Tobias Harris, very good player. You know, I mean, you got Seth Curry who hits outside shots. So you're not a terrible team, obviously. But I don't know that I don't think that that's, you know, Simmons is a, we don't know what we got with Simmons. So that's not a great situation. One other NBA note. Thank God for this. How tired are you of seeing these plays? Trae Young was doing this constantly. You'll probably see him do it tonight, where he, you know, gets his defender in the air, and then he just kind of moves into the defender and throws up some wild shot, and then he gets to the free throw line. I hate that. So the NBA is going to eliminate that for next season, where that, you know, they're going to have a rule change where you just take a shot, and if you get fouled, fine. But you can't like, it's just not natural basketball. It's like, not like something you would ever do in a pickup game at the Y, right? And Trae Young has mastered, give him credit, he's mastered the art of doing it. And he ends up going to the free throw line. He's like a 90% free throw shooter. It's a great weapon to have, but I'm tired of seeing it. And I saw it a lot with the
constant
Knicks.
Leaning in. And
yeah, like he looked a little bit of a head fake. And so the guy jumps, but he jumps straight up. He's not like, and then Trae Young will just move into the defender and he gets the foul call. Well, that's not right. That's not basketball. So I don't know when that became a play that we see all the time now. It's one thing if you're just going, you know, straight up and you get fouled. But I hate that rule, so they're going to change that. So we'll see what happens tonight. Who do you like? I think we talked about this earlier. Atlanta has been very impressive. I was not stunned that they beat Philadelphia. I think their run ends in this series. I think Milwaukee, in what will be, I think, a very good series, long series, because of Giannis and Middleton's a great player. I think I like the Bucks in maybe 6 or 7 in this series. What about you?
I don't know. I mean,
I think you told me earlier in the week.
I think I'm leaning a little more towards the Hawks right now, and just because I think the Hawks have played a better game than this in the playoffs. Like they seem to have it more together. But again, I mean, if you neutralize Trae Young, I really don't know who's going to step up too much for the Hawks. Where the Bucks kind of have a big three, like a rumored big three, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what kind of Giannis shows up.
And if he hits his free throws, that'll be interesting. Yeah.
Well, if he takes them.
Yeah. We're still waiting. Yeah. All right, that series gets going tonight, game one in Milwaukee. We'll step aside, come on back. Stay with us, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to the Sports Map Radio Network,
presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's John Stashower.
We were just talking about possible destinations for Ben Simmons. We'll ask Chris Sheridan about it. He'll join us next hour, longtime NBA scribe, get his thoughts on not only that, but you got six NBA teams looking for a new head coach. Nobody's hired one yet, so we'll get the latest from Chris Sheridan coming up. We obviously talked yesterday a little about Carl Nassib coming out, the Las Vegas Raiders defensive lineman, first active NFL player to come out as gay, and it's amazing. Some people have been critical that more of the big-name NFL players, I guess, you know, the quarterbacks, when you think about that, that didn't tweet support. But plenty of people did. J.J. Watt, I know, did. And good job by the NFL. You know, Carl Nassib donated $100,000 to this Trevor Project, which is, you know, deals with suicide prevention and leads to people being willing to come out as he did, and the NFL matching that $100,000. And how about the idea that the Carl Nassib jersey, I think it's 94, it was the top-selling jersey after the news broke. Now, it's interesting. We talked a little about what, you know, will there be reaction of his teammates. Richie Incognito, remember the guy who bullied the Jonathan Martin in Miami? He's his teammate in Las Vegas. I don't know if that's worth watching as they get together for training camp next month. Another hour straight ahead. Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. John Stanley, Ron Coleman. Stay with us.